you know, I have a long way to go. Let me say it this way. I have a long ways to go when it comes to raising my family. My son, who is here tonight, and first of all, I apologize to David, and I'll apologize to the rest. Mondays are my wife's real long day at work, and so my little girl and my son and I went visiting today, and she didn't get a nap in. She's five, so I didn't bring her to save some of the keeper's sake, and my wife and I were kind of crossing paths, but they would have loved to have been here. Michelle grew up, I say grew up here. They moved here when she was 12 years old from Louisiana, and so this is Michelle's home. Michelle and I both got married here. We love Creekwood. I love David Sargent, and what I was saying before that is I have a long ways to go before I feel like I can really talk about family. So why did you write on it? Well, what I did is I observed, and men like David Sargent, who has done a phenomenal job, he and Patrice, in raising their children. Men like Ricky Butts, who is one of my heroes in life, who has raised three Christian boys, two of whom are in the ministry, whether it be through education or through youth and family ministry. And you know, I there are others that I could talk about from Azalea City and so many that what this is in this book is just a collaboration of things that get us back kind of to the Mayberry days when life seemed to be more simple. Even though I know there was sin in the world and there was struggles in the world, there always has been. We read the Bible and we see the dangers of sin, but now it's just we're busy. I believe the devil's greatest tool, one of them, is to keep us very, very busy. So I sat down, I guess now I've been in the ministry of nearly 20 years. I've been at Azalea City 17, which is the longest running minister now, and it's just wild. I can't believe how fast time goes. Now, I haven't always worn the same hat at Azalea City, but some reason they keep putting up with me over there. But, you know, I think about in the 20 years or so that I've really been in the ministry, whether it be youth and family or through Mobile Christian School, through a teaching role, a coaching role, or in a preaching role, in counseling families, talking to families, I think it's safe to say that even in the church, we're seeing families struggle. And, you know, it bothers me. Mr. Gallagher's here and so many others from Mobile Christian that have taught Bible there and such. You know, people have asked me, what's your least favorite thing to teach on? It's not baptism. Because, you know, by the time you get done teaching that, a lot of those kids have come around. Whether they admit it or not, they have and they see it. Musical instruments wasn't hard. Mine was always divorce and remarriage. Not because of where, not because I disagree with what Christ said. That's not hard. It's not hard to lay it out. It was hard because so many of them are affected by divorce. And so many of them will then say, well, that means my mama's going to hell or my dad. And it's so hard. It was gut-wrenching. And so I set out trying to write something that could get us in the habit of doing things as families. First of all, pointing to God. I would like to break the chain. The statistics say that 50% are divorced, but really, there's only about 25% that are living in highly functioning families these days. Because of the number of 50%, there's still a number that aren't even married. They're just living together and such. And so, I could talk on and on about the book. It's simple. Terry Cagle is a simple person. So this book is a simple book. It's not a very long book. It's a short book to read. But the 21 practices, it wouldn't take somebody long to read it. But what I pray will happen is that for 21 straight days, people will practice the habits that are in the book. They'll do it as a devotional or family talk or something like that. Because what happens, experts will tell you, if you do something 21 times, it becomes a habit. So that's why we come up with the play on the word there, if you will, 21 habits. Before I get into it, I need to tell you about the picture. Let me tell you, if you've if you've ever written a book, you know it's a wild ride. I never believed I would do something like that. But as I was thinking about it, you know, they get down to and they say, you design your own cover. Initially, I knew I wanted my children to be involved. If I'm going to write a book on family, I want to include my own family. So, and then my wife, she got to hear it a lot. So that's how she's involved. But I said to my son, Bo, who's here tonight, I said, Bo, he was about 7, I guess, at the time. I said, I want you and Matt, I want you to take Madeline in the other room. She was about 3. And I said, I want you guys to draw a picture of a happy family. And that's all the information. I gave them some colored pencils and a piece of paper. And this is what they came back with, this picture. Bo drew it, Madeline colored it. And you know, I was really blown away. Right down to our dog, it's our family. And I said, why do you believe our family is happy? Of course, you can see the red church building there on the right, our right. And he said, well, Dad, I believe our family's happy because we have God in our family. And that's exactly what I wanted to get out. And so they were nice enough to include it on the cover. And so I always lead in when I do this talk, I always lead in to ask, and I know it's a Monday night during the week, Vacation Bible School, and we've got some great families here. But if I were going to do this in a time when I certainly thought, and so I'm going to ask tonight, just maybe you can use this as well, is if your family, if your children, if your grandchildren were to draw a picture of a happy family, would they draw your family? You know, I couldn't tell you until mine did it that they would. Now, I was encouraged by that because I'm surprised Bo didn't draw Daddy with this big fire coming out his ears and mouth, because a lot of times that's how Daddy is pictured, you know. But at the same time, what would your family draw? You know, and that's a difficult question to ask and come to grips with sometimes. But we have to be honest, right? We're talking about this, our sermon series in the month of June is It's Time for a Checkup, you know, playing off of Doc McStuffins, I guess, if you will. But it's time for a checkup because we're in the year, the month 6 of the year 2016. That's hard to believe as well. But we're at the halfway point. And so we need self-examination. So I need to ask myself on different times, am I being the father I need to be? Am I being the husband I need to be? Am I being the son, the grandfather, the grandmother? And we could go on and on. What would your family draw? So, how does family growth relate to church growth? Because I believe with all my heart, the church will grow if the family is strong. Now, I believe that we can look at Scripture and we can look through Scripture and we can see. One of those men that always comes to mind is Noah. And I talk about Noah a great deal in the book. And what I like to share with Noah, if you study what the Hebrew writer said about Noah in Hebrews 11, he said that Noah, by faith, Noah built the ark for the saving of his household. You know, day one, you remember the boards that we used to have, and some church buildings still have them, that would show the attendance and the contribution, the song number and all that. Well, on day one, guess what? Noah went over to the board there, and it showed 8. Noah's preaching. Now, how long did he preach? I don't know, 100 years, 120 years he took to build this ark? A long time. It would take a long time with everything we have today to construct it, much less then. But he goes, day 2, there's 8. Year 10, there's 8. But we'd be fired by now with no growth, right, us preachers. Year 20, year 30, we could go on and on. And when they went on the ark, there was 8. And some would look at Noah as a preaching failure. But I look at Noah as a hero. Because Noah got his own children, his wife, and had the influence to get those daughter-in-laws on that ark as well. You see, that's what it's about. It's about growing the family and growing the church throughout Scripture. God provides instruction related to marriage, to family, to parenting. That's a beautiful thing about it. God gives it to us in the Bible. Relationships are a core part of who God is and who He would have us to become. In the book of Genesis, we see God in relationship with man, right? We see male and female in relationship with one another through marriage. We see parents and children in relationship in the family. We see families and groups of families that make up the 12 tribes of Israel in relationship with the other tribes. You see, the Bible is, God is big on relationships. And if the family were not important, God wouldn't have been the one who designed it. Remember, God doesn't make any junk, right? So God made the family. He made Adam, and Adam brought all those animals, named them, and didn't find a helper. So God put him to sleep, and He made Eve, and He joined them together. Now, it's interesting to note the Hebrew home was the primary educational, recreational, and social center for the children. Think about that. The Hebrew home was the primary educational, recreational, and social center for the children. Religious education was centered in the home. And, you know, it hasn't been that many hundreds of years ago that the Bible was taught in schools and in the home and such. Hopefully it's still taught in the home. But as a result of this being the center of their home, guess what happened? Parents spent time with their children, working, teaching, communicating, and playing. And I believe all four of those are important. Working, teaching, communicating, and playing. Again, I think all four of those are vital to the family relationship. The interaction helped produce a family unit that made it possible to pass on values from parents to children, and then from generation to generation. How do we know that? Well, what does Deuteronomy 6 teach us? If you want to turn in your Bibles to Deuteronomy 6, we'll begin there in verse 1. Now, this is the commandment, Moses writes. This is the commandment, the statutes, and the rules that the Lord your God... Now, that's important. If you're an underliner or highlighter, you remember who these commands are from. They're from God, not from Moses. They're from God. The rules and statutes the Lord your God commanded me to teach you, that you may do what? Do them in the land to which you are going over to possess it, that you may fear the Lord your God, you and who? Your son. And who else? Your son's son. Now note that plan there. Again, talking to those, the leaders of the family, okay? He says, I am to teach these to you so that you will do them and that you will teach them to your son and your son's son by keeping all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you all the days of your life, and that your days may be long. Hear therefore, Israel, be careful to do them, that it may go well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you in a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be where? On your heart. And what should you do with these words? Teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, that they shall be frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Now, think about that. Moses, through God, instructs them to take these commandments, love the Lord your God with everything you've got. These commandments, the other commandments, you need to teach them to your, you need to do them, you need to teach them to your son, your son's son, and then you need to also diligently teach them to your children. He said, when you get up, when you lie down, when you walk by the way, you need to talk about them, you need to teach them all the time. Then he said, let it be between your eyes, let it be binded on your hand. He said, put them on the gate so that you see it when you go out, on the house when you see it when you come in. Where's the breakdown in the family? That's not happening in large part today. Yes, I know it's old law. Yes, I understand that portion of it. But folks, brothers, sisters, if we are going to change the family, we can't rely on the preachers to be the only God that our children get. We can't rely on the youth ministers to raise our children for us. You know, I joke with Justin today, again, my children, and they did some visiting with me today, and so we got to the building mid-morning or so, and Justin was in his office. I said, okay, kids, go in your office, and there they are, Justin, I'll see you later. You know, like, hey, that's your job, right? Your job's to babysit my kids. That's not their job. Their job is to instruct what ought to be being instructed at home. We as parents have a responsibility. As grandparents, even as aunts and uncles, today I have a niece and I love her so, and she made some mistakes. She's repented of those mistakes. She has a baby who had some birth problems, but he's in the NICU at a great place in town, and she was complaining publicly. And I just very quietly tried to message her and say, remember, they're taking care of your baby. You know, and sometimes we need that reminder. She's not my daughter, but I love her enough to try to help her. So as aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters and mamas and daddies and grandpas, we have a responsibility. Do we want great churches? Absolutely. We want to tear the walls down of our buildings so that we can fit more souls. But one of the best ways to do that is to start at home. The church and the family. What do we want to talk about with that? What is the role of the church in building strong marriages and families? One vital life sign of a healthy church is the health of its marriages and its families. Think about this. If the gospel is not being talked about in the home, then why are we surprised it's not being talked about outside the home? You know, and I think one of the biggest challenges in the church today is our lack of evangelism. And I'm not talking about great evangelists. We are blessed in this area. You know, I feel so blessed to learn from great men that we have all around us, like here at David and so many others. We have great evangelists here that are hired by the congregations, but we need a congregation full of evangelists. We need to go everywhere telling people about Jesus, but we need to start that place in the home. And if we're having a tough time to do it, doing it in the home, then certainly I think we're going to have some challenges outside of it as well. If we can't help two people to function biblically in their marriages, how can we expect those same two people, plus their children, to function biblically as a family? If they aren't functioning biblically as a family, how can we expect them to come to church on Sunday morning with hundreds of other families and magically function as the body that God designed? If it's not happening with individual couples and families, it's virtually impossible that it will happen when the body of Christ meets. Think about it this way. In Acts chapter 10, Peter taught Cornelius. He and his household. In Acts 16, Paul taught Lydia, and she and her household were baptized. in Acts 16, the Philippian jailer and his family were all baptized. In Acts 18, then Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue, believed on the Lord with all his household. And many of the Corinthians hearing believed and were baptized. Now, in 1 Corinthians 1, I know the church at Corinth had a lot of issues. Paul's writing this to prove a point, but I want you to hear what he says. He wrote he had baptized the household of Stephanas. It's obvious that the best marriage a family can experience is the marriage to Jesus Christ. So, how can we grow godly, highly functioning families? As David mentioned, there are 21 in the book, and I will not go through all 21 tonight. What I have done is pick three that I believe are subjects that, you know, really will catch our attention and be able to remind us of maybe some things that, oh yeah, I hope that will happen tonight. Oh yeah, kind of a moment, you know, that will go off, that this stuff is not complicated, but I believe it's very powerful. One of the things I talked about, and by the way, let me say this, I believe, again, if we go back to Deuteronomy 6, from the rising up, walking by the way, teaching, talking, to the going down, doorposts, gates, frontlets between your eyes, they talked about God in their home, right? They talked about things. So with all of this, it's going to point back to how can we be together and how can we talk more about God? Well, one thing I want to talk about, and I talk about in the book, if we're going to treasure our families, we need to have a devo called How Did You See God Today? And I titled it See God Together. Now, Psalm 46, verse 10. Very powerful psalm. We sing it, right? It simply says in that verse, be still and know that I am God. Now, I do not believe that there are, I mean, the sins that are sins today have always been sins. There haven't been any sins, to my knowledge, that have been invented lately. Okay, they've been glorified a lot more. But Sodom and Gomorrah struggled with a lot of things that are being glorified today, okay? And there are all kinds of sins that we could talk about. Drunkenness to, you know, all kinds of sins that are going on. So, I say that to say what I believe has happened, like I said at the beginning, it's not new sins, it's just more opportunities to get into sin. It's all around us, right? And what has happened? We've become busy. Busy, busy, busy. You know, I've got a youth minister friend, and I love him dearly, but I'll talk to him, and every time, I think it's his catch answer, hey man, how you doing? He says, I'm just busy. Well, I hope you slow down every now and then, you know? But that's what happens. We've gotten so busy that sometimes we are neglecting to do things like be still and know that He is God. It's probably my favorite habit. That's why I put it in here. It's my favorite devotional to have, especially with my children right now at their age that they are. You know, and we play this spontaneously. And I say play it. I don't want you to think of it as a game, but it's something we do. It's a devo we do, and we could do it in the home. We can do it going down the road. We can do it on the way to church. You know, we do it all the time. And they never know when Daddy's going to ask, because I don't want them to be prepared. I want them all the time to go around and look and think and see, how did I see God? So we play the How Did You See God Today devo quite often. You see, when we see God, it changes us. It changes us for the better. In fact, Moses saw God in Exodus 34, 29. Now it was so when Moses came down from Mount Sinai and the two tablets of the testimony were in Moses' hand when he came down from the mountain that Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone while he talked with him. Isaiah saw God in Isaiah 6, and he realized how holy God was. Jacob saw God in Genesis 32:30, and it preserved his life. Now, they didn't actually look on the face of God. No one is able to do that, we understand. But they saw Him. So today, in our children and all, we need to explain, we can't actually see God, but we can see Him. So, let me just tell you a couple things. And I write about this in the book, and so if you get a copy or whatever, you'll read about this again. But I believe this one will hit home. Again, my little girl, Madeline. My son is really sharp and really proud of him. And, you know, there are times that I've wondered about my little girl. I love her. Does she really get it? She's had Miss Patrice. She's had great teachers. She's had Miss Liz Burris. And bless her heart, Miss Patrice has always had both my children first. And she's gone through it with them. Then by the time they get a little bit older, she's worked all the kinks out. And so it's better for the others. But Bo's kind of always really understood and such, but Madeline, sometimes I wonder, but lately I haven't had to do that. Because sometimes you'll say, how did you see God today? And they'll say, well, I saw God in the sky. Or I see God in mommy, and you know, it's sweet and all that. But you wanted to dig a little deeper. But one day, my kids had been praying for Miss Darlene Migsy. Okay, Miss Darlene was a great lady at Mobile Christian, a great worker for the Lord, and just had a type of spirit that, you know, she just was going to stop you and talk to you and be friendly with you. Well, along the way, they started praying. Miss Patrice, Madeline was in Miss Patrice's class at this time, and so every day they would pray, or they'd pray over the PA, and they would pray. And so Madeline would include in her prayers Miss Darlene. Well, the day we found out that Miss Darlene lost her battle with cancer. Michelle and I were trying to eat a meal together, and that's another habit we'll talk about in the book. Not tonight. But we were eating together, and we said, hey, we need to be prepared because Madeline's going to take this so hard. I mean, it's going to devastate her. And to fast forward the story, we got there. And again, some of this, I saw God in the trees. That's some of the answers, okay? We tell her what happened, and she didn't cry. She said, Daddy, can we play How Did I See God Today? I said, yes. She said, I saw God today because God let Miss Darlene go to heaven. And it's those type of moments that when you have those aha moments, that this habit will change your family dynamics. Now you may be thinking, well, my kids are gone. Play it with your wife. It will change your relationship. Because it will get us in the habit of being focused on God. There's a lot of negativity around us, isn't it? And there's a lot of times, listen, I know you think that, hey, some people may think, hey, they're Christians, they don't ever get down. There's a Greek word called baloney, right, for that. We get down. We have those moments. But if we can focus on God, it'll change us. It's a great habit to be in. Secondly, tonight, this is one that I was on Studio 10 last week. Somebody had got me on there to talk about my book, and Michael, the meteorologist, he was filling in, and he was interviewing me, and you're on a 3 to 5 minute segment, and so this is how prepared they are. They look through the book, you know, a little bit, and we pick out a couple things, but the first thing he turned to was turn off devices. He said, that's one we need to talk about. And so, you know, it made an instant impact on him, and let's talk about this for a moment. You know, cell phones, tablets, computers, video games, social media, all those things can be great tools. They really can. I use a lot of electronics. I am using electronics tonight. there are people who do not realize that I am at Vacation Bible School speaking because they're calling me on my phone right now as I'm trying to talk. But I have devices here. I have devices. I've got computers. You know, the days of, and some people still work this way, and there's nothing wrong with it. But very rarely do I have to go pull a book off the shelf anymore. It's all in electronic form. I can have 5 different versions of the Bible pulled up on my computer screen at once, including the Greek or Hebrew. It's a blessing. Again, I'm not knocking electronics. They can be very helpful, but technology can also be very distracting. But they can also become gods. And quite frankly, I'm afraid that that's happening in our families. I was at a restaurant the other day, and when I say a restaurant, it was not a real fancy restaurant. But, you know, I try not to gaze at other people and all that. But sometimes you can't help it. And I saw a young couple, and, you know, I was happy to see they had wedding rings on. I mean, those are the things that, you know, I get excited about now. This is a couple not living together. They're trying to do it the right way, per se. But you can tell they're young. They haven't been married too long. But they're at a restaurant together, and they haven't said 2 words to each other. This is what they're doing. And, you know, the waiter or waitress comes, and they're, and they'll order and all that. Well, that becomes a problem. I've joked before, tongue-in-cheek, that one day, David, we're going to perform wedding ceremony. We're not going to say a word. We're going to text, "Do you?" And they're going to text back, "I do." And it's going to be on the screen. And of course, I say that, you know, joking. But that's about where we are. That's about where we are. Relationships, again, I use Facebook, and I try to use good. By the way, I put good on Facebook, and it's come back to bite me. I'm telling you, there have been days I've almost shut that thing completely down 1,000 times. Right now, if you're saying, "I'm not going to ever get on that," stick to your guns. I promise you, you'll be better off for it. But, you know, just trying to stay up. Some people screen your phone calls after a while, you know. I mean, as a preacher, sometimes you get a complex. Now that we have caller ID, do not answer is what they list the preacher as, you know. No, but so sometimes that's the only way to communicate with certain people. But it's becoming a problem. There are affairs that are happening through social media. Children, I believe it's God is writing it on their DNA to know how to use. You know, you hear people say, "Well, they know how to operate an iPad right out of the womb." That's not far off. But the reality is, too much can be too much. A little much can be too much. And the point of it is it's becoming gods. You want to see a child get upset, a teenager get upset? It's not going to be, "Hey, I'm going to ground you," or whatever. They can get over that. You take their phone away. You see how they get upset. You take their tablet away. You take their FaceTime, their Skype, their whatever away. And you'll see if it becomes a god, if it's become a god. Sometimes adults, we might be that way too. You know, God hasn't changed. He's still a jealous God. He still doesn't want any other gods before Him. So this may be unpopular, but it comes a point in time when we need to decide every day. We need to have a time when we turn the devices off. We need to have a time in our family. Maybe it's the dinner. I've got one chapter in the book, eat meals together. Eat at the dinner table. Maybe that's the time we decide to turn the devices off. We're not talking about all night long. Maybe you may decide to do that. Fine. I hope that, you know, all power to you. Maybe it's just an hour. But find time every day to do something extraordinary. Put those devices down. Turn those devices off. Look at each other in the eyes and talk. That seems so outdated, I know. That seems so Mayberry. That seems so whatever. But let me tell you right now, that works. It works. And I have to remind myself of this. You know, sometimes I'll speak to myself, and I believe I can speak to others, but, you know, as ministers, we think, man, if I miss one call, or I miss one text, or I miss one whatever, you know, what's going to happen? But the reality is, we have voicemail. We also have families. We also have time we need to spend with our families. It's okay. Turn them off. Turn the devices off. Children are on loan from God. Anybody ever looked at a baby and said, look at that little hellbound sinner? No, they haven't. You hear things like angel or miracle. You hear those words thrown around, right? Nobody looks at a baby and says, that baby is from hell. Children are from God. They're on loan, though. He wants us to do everything in our power to get them back to God, even if it's unpopular. Finally tonight. This one's a no-brainer as a Christian, but I think we have to remind ourselves. We need to have Bible studies daily in our homes, because if we do not, then our children are being absorbed. They're having absorbed into their lives social media and friends and everything else. And we're giving them 3 hours at the most of God a week. The B-I-B-L-E. Yes, that's the book for me. I stand alone on the Word of God. The B-I-B-L-E. Let me give you some facts about the Bible. This is why it's extraordinary to me. The canon of the Old Testament was nearly universally agreed upon by AD 250. The New Testament canon, except for Hebrews, James, and 3 John, they were more around AD 363, but it was compiled in AD 170. The Bible was written under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, God breathed, remember, by over 40 different authors from all walks of life, shepherds, farmers, tent makers, physicians, fishermen, priests, philosophers, kings. Despite these differences in occupation and the span of years it took to write it, the Bible is an extremely cohesive and unified book. It was written over a period of some 1,500 years, from around 1450 BC, the time of Moses, to a few decades after the resurrection of Christ. The Bible was written in 3 languages, Hebrew, Aramaic, and Koine Greek. Why Koine Greek? Well, Koine Greek today is a dead language, meaning it will never change again. Again, God's design in it all. Greek has changed, English changes, those words change, but Koine Greek is the same, so what it was written in is still the same today. So we have no difference in that. We can go back to the Koine Greek. We talk about putting the canon together. What does the word canon mean? Canon is derived from the Greek word K-A-N-O-N, signifying a measuring rod. A measuring rod. Thus, to have the Bible canonized, it meant that it had to be measured by the standard or test of divine inspiration and authority. It became the collection of books or writings accepted by the apostles and leadership of the early Christian church as a basis for Christian belief. It is the standard by which all Christians throughout the ages live and worship. It is still the best-selling book in the world. Here's a quote. I don't believe you'll disagree with the quote. I just want you to think about who said the quote. The King James Bible of 1611, the authorized version, includes passages of outstanding literary merit in its own right. For example, the Song of Songs, which we call the Song of Solomon, and the sublime Ecclesiastes, which I am told is pretty good in the original Hebrew too. But the main reason the English Bible needs, listen to this, the main reason the English Bible needs to be part of our education is that it is a major source book for literary culture. Now, I would agree with that. I agree that the Bible needs to be part of our education each and every day. Who said it? Richard Dawkins, noted atheist, author of The God Delusion. You see, the Bible, the B-I-B-L-E, it's the greatest book in the world. It's the greatest book in existence. It has impacted and changed the world. Even atheists recognize that. Knowing all of that, knowing how special it is, how powerful it is, why in the world would we not be teaching it in our homes? You have to find what works for you. My children love to act out stories. Sometimes there's a whole nother lesson in them getting ready to act out that story because Bo gets aggravated with Madeline, Madeline gets aggravated with Bo, and I'm like, y'all are missing the point of all this. But we'll send them in there, and they come up with their own story, and they come out and act it out, and they're pretty good at it. I mean, the other day, we had to go through all of marching around Jericho. Not just seven times on the seventh day, every day, 6 days. I mean, they did the whole nine yards. But it's powerful. But you don't have to always act it out. Maybe sometimes you participate in it. When I was a Mobile Christian, one thing the kids loved to play was Bible baseball. I went to the bookstore, and I think it was Family Christian. You know, they've moved and gone up on Bibles, by the way. But, you know, they've got a fancy place up here now, and I don't know if they have it anymore, but you could buy a Bible baseball game, and it would have questions listed as singles, doubles, triples, and home runs. One side was a little bit harder than the other. And so we would play that game a lot of times on Fridays. They thought, hey, this is a free day. We're having fun. But we were asking Bible knowledge. Get you a Bible baseball game. Get you a Bible trivia game. Or an app, you know, or whatever it is now. You know, those are out there. Or pick up and read a story out of it and talk about it. Make application. Ask your children. Don't think they're too young. Now, yeah, I understand Song of Solomon may be off limits for a little while. But the reality is, there are so many things they can relate to. Be creative in it. Oh, my children are out of the home. Well, husbands and wives need to have devotionals together too. You know, it's just, it doesn't matter how old we get. We need to be in the book. People perish because of a lack of knowledge. One thing about it, I heard somebody say one time, I tell you what's wrong with the world today. People have gone and put their Bibles away. They're living by the law of the jungle, not the law of the land. Well, I wish I could believe the Bible was still the law of the land too. But the reality is, that has a lot of truth in it. Let's get them back out. Let's dust them off if we have to. And let's start tonight. Three things I left you with today that you could practice tonight. You can have a time when you go home when you say, hey kids, I want you to come in here. We're going to turn our devices off. Leave your phones away. Turn the TVs off. Turn everything out. Let's get in the living room. Let's get at the table. We're going to start having Bible studies every night. Tonight's Bible study, how did you see God today? Right there, it all works. It all flows. You do those kinds of things day after day, the devil's going to be pretty upset because we're going to start pointing the family in the right direction and we're going to build highly functioning families together. I want to close with this. Today we're not doing an invitation. We're just closing, right? What if your family is not where you want it to be? It's going to sound like an invitation, but bear with me. What if your children are grown and out of the home? What if you have had a failed marriage? You know, it's not too late to begin good habits. Wherever we are in life, we can start today. Maybe we've had bad habits, but we can start right now, today, and start having good habits. You see, it's time to reconcile where we can reconcile. It's time to step up where we can step up. It's just like starting a new diet or a new gym exercise or workout program or even a new job. There's no better time to do it than right now, to just jump in head first. You know why? Our families matter. Our legacy matters. Our influence matters. Our spouse is depending on us. Our children are depending on us. So let's build our homes on the foundation of Jesus Christ. And that takes good habits. After all, I reference you back to Joshua 24. If we were going to stand and give a farewell speech, if we were going to conclude the whole matter, wouldn't it be great to be able to say, "As for me and my house, we have served the Lord."